20 to 8.
Just had a hearse. It's never happened before. A guest has corrected our timekeeping.
Yes, it is actually 20 past eight, and Michael Gray, sitting across from me in the studio, immediately corrected me.
Funny way of handing in your notice.
Welcome to you, and we will talk to you in just a moment. The reason you're here is because, and the reason we ran those signature sounds of ITV channels from around the country and over the years is because it is 60 years since the birth of commercial television in the UK. Viewers in London were the first to see something new on Channel 3, something at all on Channel 3 on this day in 1955. Well, the reaction to this new dawn, at least as far as the newspapers was concerned, was rather mixed. The Telegraph thought it was a subdued opening. The Daily Mail, though, praised the fantastic feat of the backroom boys who made the technology work. Our reporter Sancha Berg has been looking back at the reviews.
Tonight, 7:15, September 22nd, 1955. We add another sentence to the long history of London.
It didn't sound or look like a television revolution. The commercial channel's opening film showed London's highlights before moving on to a live gala at the Guildhall. The Daily Mail approved, saying the first moments wrote their piece of the social history of Britain in a dignified and stirring style. The Times arts critic sounded disappointed. He wrote, it was one of those evenings of trial and excitement with everyone on their best behaviour and below their usual form. The Daily Telegraph critic, L. Marsden Gander, thought it very like the BBC at the start. He was waiting, impatiently, for the real novelty, the ads.
It's tingling fresh. It's fresh as ice.
The first was about a toothpaste and its delicious tingle. There was a lot of ice and snow and a glimpse of a rushing stream. I thought, then the picture of a girl somewhat needlessly scrubbing at immaculate teeth.
Brian Palmer, a young copywriter, wrote the very first commercial.
I came to write this particular ad because Gibbs SR is one of our clients, and they had in their press and poster advertising the image of a toothpaste and a toothbrush in a block of ice, which was promoting the idea of freshness, tingling freshness.
And you'd never done one before?
No, I'd never made a television ad before, and I don't think anybody in the UK had, unless they'd previously worked in the States.
See your dentist regularly and brush with SR, the tingling fresh toothpaste for teeth and gums.
Marsden Gander was not impressed.
I found the advertisements disappointing. When they came at 8:13, in what was somewhat arbitrarily treated as a natural break in a variety programme, the commercials had a touch of anticlimax about them. Three announcements followed, one another so rapidly that though watching intensely, I found they made little impact.
I find that, at this distance, very strange, because today it looks to me like a slide lecture and very, very plodding. But maybe at the time he hadn't seen much television at all anyway.
Still, television viewers were in the minority, weren't they, in 1955?
One's got to remember that there were very few television sets of even any kind, even the BBC. And those that were adapted to receive independent television were even smaller in numbers.
It wasn't just the ads, of course. Viewers for the first time would have a choice. That came as something of a relief to the Daily Mail television critic, Peter Black, whose postbag was often full of complaints about BBC programmes.
A high proportion of the viewing audience has never quite realised that they are not compelled to look at everything. They have, in fact, looked at everything and have worked up a sincere sense of grievance when everything has not been to their taste. With the arrival of an alternative programme, TV has moved out of its decade of hysteria and settled down as just another amenity, like Gaslight and Coke.
He could hardly have been more wrong. Television didn't settle down. As ITV extended across the country and developed its own distinct character, the two networks began a real fight for audiences.
Over to Guildhall. Good luck all. Here we go. Take it, Master Control.
Master control.
A piece of history.
A bit of nostalgia going on here.
Yes, listening to that with us is Lord Grade, former chairman of ITV. His uncle, Hugh Grade, was a pioneer of independent television because he founded one of the very first franchises, Associated Television. Good morning.
Good morning.
And you are with us at 25 past eight.
I won't take your word
now.
For it.
Oh, no, not anymore. So take us back then, 1955. How did that moment come about?
There was a bitter battle in Parliament. Many people were opposed to the idea of putting up competition for the BBC. But BBC Television was a small division of BBC Wireless. Wireless was the thing. But the conservative free marketeers won out in the end in the debate. Lord Reith, the great founder of the BBC, described ITV, I think, as the Antichrist in a debate in the House of Lords. But it happened. And television in this country was turned into commerce, and television was delivered from the hands of the civil servants and the people who'd had a very good war, who inhabited the BBC in those days, and handed over to the people who ran show business in this country.
Right, so it had a remit, or there was an expectation from the start that it was going to do something different, it was going to deliver something more popular?
I don't think anybody knew. I think the powers that be were hoping that ITV wouldn't be too brash and would do good works. There was still a patrician attitude to broadcasting in the UK at that time. And so the licences that you operated under required you to do certain things. Even in my time in ITV, we scheduled Glyndebourne relays live on a Sunday night across peak time. It's hard to believe today. But in return for the monopoly, you delivered public service good works. There was still a patrician air about broadcasting, but we turned it into commerce, really.
The monopoly on commercial television, because this was the only place, if you were going to make a television ad to sell your product, this was the only place it was going to be seen.
Exactly, had a monopoly of revenue. And in return for that, it was a brilliant piece of public policy making. ITV was turned into a federal, regional, nations and regions system with 16 companies. The BBC was basically the national broadcaster in London. Those positions today have been somewhat reversed.
It's interesting, when we listened to Sandra Berg's report, you know, looking back at the reviews of that time, it felt as though there was as much attention to the advertisements as there was to the content of what was being seen.
Well, it was a phenomenal novelty, and people didn't know what to make of it, really. But I must say, the quality of the ads in the early days, and I was 12 years old at the time, were extraordinary. Everybody will remember Murray Mintz and Rel Brooke Toplin, The Shirt You Can't Iron, and all those amazing, which still linger in the mind today. It took the advertisers quite a while. A lot of the ITV new franchisees, they had to refinance in the first 6 months because the advertisers didn't get it at all and the audience ratings weren't very... And it suddenly clicked. And things like Sunday Night at the Palladium and so on, just ITV took off. BBC were down to, I think, about an 8 or 9% share of a two-channel market, and it caused absolute mayhem at the BBC when ITV finally took off.
What state would you say it is in now commercially? I mean, the model has changed over years. We've had lots of mergers of the different companies. But is it the sustainable business model?
I think it's in very good shape. I think advertisers, and this is, you look at the American model, it's born out there, which is a much more competitive, even more competitive market. Advertisers can't get anywhere else the kind of impact that they can get on commercial free-to-air television in this country. So I think, you know, I've been reading obituaries of ITV for the last 20 years and I think it's good for another 20 or 30 years.
Well, good enough shape not to worry about the size of the BBC?
You may say that. I couldn't possibly comment.
Lord Grade, thank you very much. I sort of thought you would comment on that, but...
He would, but he's just not going to. Carefully. Should we keep the licence fee?
Oh, absolutely, 100%.
There we go. We got an answer for that.
A monopoly. The BBC must have a monopoly of revenue. If you put the BBC into competition for revenue, you don't need the BBC. It's the end of the BBC. It cannot be put into competition for revenue.
Thank you, Michael.
Thank you.
Time for sport, 8:30.
Hello. England's women have begun their bid to reach the European Championship